So this is a series you're on when you can't just get over it. So that's what some people say, well, you know, well, just get over it. That's easy to say, not always easy to do. And these are mainly dealing with relationship type issues, or maybe issues that come in, not necessarily just relationship, but things that come into our lives that impact us. And we've looked at them from different angles, different aspects of it. The last one I taught was banishing bitterness. And we've talked about different things along that line. And this morning, we're talking about this, facing false accusations. And we're going to begin in Proverbs 26. We'll come back to this verse a little bit more in the lesson. But we're going to look at quite a few other verses as well. So this is kind of launches us into a thought process that we're going to examine some scripture through this morning. So we're in Proverbs 26. I'm going to begin in verse number 20, and I'm going to read down to verse number 25. Where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. Now it's interesting how the Bible paints these great word pictures. You know, you have a fire, you take all the wood out, eventually the fire just stops because there's nothing to cause the fire to keep on going. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. Talebearer is someone like a gossip, someone who's spreading accusations. Now, the focus this morning is false accusations. But sometimes we've got to think about even true accusations. You say, well, it's true, but sometimes it doesn't need to be said. If you're talking about things to other people, and neither one of you can do anything about what's being said, you're just talking about it, trying to stir things up, that also would be inappropriate, improper way about living our Christian life. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. As coals are to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. Now notice what it says next. The words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. We'll refer to that concept here in a moment. Burning lips and a wicked heart are like a potsherd covered with silver dross. Might look nice on the outside, but inside it's not very good. He that hateth dissembleth with his lips, and layeth up deceit within him. When he speaketh fair, believe him not, for there are seven abominations in his heart. So we're talking about this idea about facing false accusations. Half the lesson is going to be dealing with one concept of it. The other half is going to be dealing with a different concept. So stay with me. The first half, you may say, well, what does that have to do with it? But I think as we go through it, you understand why we're dealing with both of these. Let me begin with something that some of you may be familiar with if you're about my age, which is about 25, something like that. So anyways, and I remember this happening, and I was young when it happened. I was still in my teens, so I didn't understand everything about it, but I do remember it happening. Under Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, his first labor secretary was a man named Ray Donovan. So Reagan was elected in 80. He began his first term in 81. That's when he was inaugurated. And then his second term he began in 85 after the next election. So this Ray Donovan served as labor secretary during Reagan's all his first term and going into his second term from 81 into 85. He resigned in 1985. Now watch this. He was the first serving cabinet member ever indicted. And they said because he was a labor secretary, he supposedly had mob ties and he was funneling federal jobs through the mafia or something like that. They accused him of these things. And so he came under federal indictment. First cabinet serving cabinet. Other have been indicted, but never when they were currently serving. So this is the first serving cabinet member ever indicted. So he goes to trial. The trial happens in 1987, I believe. So at his trial, so the prosecution comes up, they present all their evidence, and now it's the defense time to present their evidence. At his trial, his defense lawyers presented zero evidence. Here's what they said. They said, the prosecution hasn't proven anything. There's nothing for us to say. We close. We have nothing to say. The jury completely agreed with the defense, found Ray Donovan not guilty, and it was dismissed. It was, you know, nothing came of it. because there was no evidence really to, I mean, the prosecution had no true evidence to prove what they had accused him of. Now, for 2 years, from 85 to 87, he was demonized in the press. This part I remember. And it was always about, you know, how crooked Reagan's administration was because look at this labor secretary. And they just accused him, and kept spreading all of these, what turned out to be false accusations. So he goes to trial, and he's just found not guilty without any defense made. They just simply said, they have no evidence, we rest our case. And the court said, you're right, there is no evidence. Now think about this. For 2 years, he is demonized. After his trial, and this is why this is famous, because he made this statement. So he found not guilty, he comes out, he has this, you know, all the press is in front of him now, and he makes this statement. And here's what he says. Which office do I go to get my reputation back? It's a great statement. Because all this has been said about me, how do I undo 2 years of all false accusations? And you don't, because up until now, he's dead now, but all through his life, there's always, he was the first one ever serving cabinet member ever indicted. And so he had these false accusations lodged against him. Now, one reason I think false accusations are so painful and aggravating is because once said, someone will always believe them. If someone says something about you, someone's going to believe it. And that's what's aggravating. No matter how untrue it is, they're like, well, I heard. And so that's what makes this painful and aggravating. Mark Twain is attributed with this statement. A lie can travel halfway around the world before the truth puts on its shoes. In other words, when something is said, it's like a wildfire before anyone ever figures out what's true or not. Another statement, this is a little bit more lengthy. A man named Jonathan Swift, maybe familiar with the name, but not really know much about him. He's an English writer back in the 1700s, probably talking pre-Revolutionary War. And he was a satirist, he was a political writer, opinion writer, and he said this statement. Now this is written back in the 1700s, so it's a little 1700s-ish type of language. But I think it's a good statement. Besides, as the vilest writer has his readers, so the greatest liar has his believers. And it often happens that if a lie be believed only for an hour, it has done its work, and there is no farther occasion for it. Falsehood flies, and the truth comes limping after it. So that when men come to be undeceived, it is too late. The jest is over, and the tale has had its effect. That's another good statement. So we're going to look at this morning, this idea of facing false accusations. We've got 3 points I want to bring out. Now, the first half, I want to warn about the spreading of false accusations. Because really, if we're concerned about false accusations not only coming to us, but we should be concerned about false accusations coming from us. And so that's also true. So we're going to warn about the danger of spreading false accusations and then instruct on dealing with false accusations that come our way in a way that honors God. So let me give you 3 thoughts about this. So here's thought number 1. Satan is the source of lies. Now that right there should pique our attention, make our ears kind of stand up and say, wait a minute, lies come from where? They come from Satan. Satan is the source of lies. How do I know that? Because the Bible tells me. John chapter number 8, here's what Jesus said, you are your father the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. Now notice what he combines here. He combines this idea of being a murderer and being a liar, because I think we'll come back to that thought here in a little bit as well. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a what? Liar and the father of it. So he's the source of lies. Also, I like where it says, because there's no truth in him. Anything Satan tells you is a lie. That's all he does. He speaks lies. Now let me show you the flip side of it. Titus chapter 1, verse 2, in the hope of eternal life, which God that cannot lie. So any lie comes from Satan, because Satan is the father of lies, and God, our God, cannot lie. So if it's a lie, it's coming from Satan. So believers ought to repudiate lying, because it aligns us with Satan and not with God. So we should reject lying. I never want to be a part of that, because if I'm lying, I'm being on the side of Satan. I'm not being on the side of God. God doesn't lie. So the only one that lies is Satan. So I don't want to be like that. So first we're talking about we don't want to be spreading false accusations. Sometimes we do it without thinking. We just repeat things we've heard. But if it's a lie and you repeat it, what are you doing? You're lying. So, well, that's what I was told, but it wasn't true. And you continued that. So we are still accountable for the things we say. So we want to repudiate lying, because it aligns us with Satan, not with God. Now, one way to repudiate lying is not to make accusations that are based on gossip, things have been told you, or assumptions. If someone tells me something, and I don't know if it's true or not, and I say, hey, you know what I heard? Well, wait a minute, if I don't know it's true, why am I spreading it? I may be guilty of this, of doing exactly what we don't want others to do about to us. Or we make these false accusations based on assumptions. We just put two and two together and come up with six or seven or eight, and that's what it looks like to me. Now, think about this statement. We are responsible for our words, so we must make sure that they are based on truth. When you go, if you get your concealed carry permit, you have to go to a class and they tell you some things about safe handling of firearms. One thing they're going to tell you is this: when that bullet leaves your weapon, you're responsible for anything that happens. So if you're aiming here, but you don't know that there's someone back behind that, and you shoot them, you say, well, I didn't see them. Well, I didn't know they're there. But you're responsible, because you're the one who fired the weapon. Same thing is true with your words. When your words come out of your mouth, the Bible calls them like arrows. When you shoot these words out of your mouth, you're responsible for what happens with these words. We can't say, well, I didn't know. Then you shouldn't have said what you said if you did not know. So we're responsible for the words that come out of our mouth. You say, Pastor White, are you just making this up? Let me show you a verse. Matthew 12. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things. And notice, this is said, there are several applications, but this is said in the context of speaking. How we know that? Because that's what verse 34 is talking about. Abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. And an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. So we are responsible for the words that come out of our mouth. Now let me talk a little bit more about this, about assumptions. Because if I were to guess, I think probably the number one way that we end up spreading false accusations is through assumptions. One way Satan lies is to impugn the motives of others and then cast aspersion on them what they're doing. Well, here's why they're doing that. Here's a reason. I know why they're doing that, impugning their motives. Revelation 12 says this, and I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down. That's Satan, which accused them before our God day and night. Now some things he accuses of is true, but some things are not true. He just says, well, you know why they're really doing that. You know they don't really love you. How do I know that? Because we see an example in the Bible. Watch this. Job chapter 1. This is what happens about Satan and Job. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made a hedge about him and about his house? and about all that he hath on every side. Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thy hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. He's impugning Job's motive. He's saying, the only reason that Job is really serving you is because, look, he has. Look at the house he has. Look at the family he has. Look at the car he drives. I know he didn't literally drive a car, but, you know, I'm making some application. Okay, look at the chariot he drove. Look at the donkey he rides. Whatever. Look at all that he has. Of course he serves you because he just has it easy and he just likes what you've done for him. He doesn't really love you. Now, Satan is proven wrong, but notice he's attacking the motives of Job. Falsely attacking the motives of Job. There's a false accusation based on the impugning of his motives. Now watch this. Neither Satan, nor you, nor me, can read minds and tell what that motive is. Well, I know what they're thinking. How do you know what they're thinking? Because if they didn't say it, you are guessing. You're making assumption. And you could be completely false in that. Often we say, I know what they're thinking. That right there is a lie because you don't know. And what comes out next can often be a lie as well. Now, there's an old story about this. It's kind of funny. I think it's kind of funny. So John is going down the road. And he sees a hitchhiker. And he, I'll give this guy a ride. So he pulls over, the hitchhiker gets in, and he's going down the road. But you know, the more they're going down the road, more kind of sketchy this hitchhiker seems to be to John. And John's kind of a little bit nervous, and John, you know, his coat is between him and the hitchhiker, and he realizes, I always keep my wallet in my coat pocket. So he reaches over, and he realizes his coat is not in his pocket. He's thinking, this guy just stole my wallet. So he pulls over real fast. He looks at the hitchhiker and says, hand over the wallet and get out. Hitchhiker's like, you know, real hands over the wallet, gets out. He takes off. He goes home. And he's really kind of miffed. I was nice to this guy, and the guy tried to steal my wallet. He goes inside. He's about to tell his wife what's happening. And as he's starting the story, his wife says, well, wait a minute. I just want to let you know that you left your wallet on the dresser this morning. Now, he was completely wrong about the hitchhiker, wasn't he? He had all this work done. I'm thinking about the hitchhiker. He's like, this guy gave me a ride and stole my wallet. So anyways, assuming motives, making this assumption is what gets us in trouble. That's number one. Satan is a source of lies. Number two, now watch this one. This is going to be, it doesn't always sit well with people. Number two is this. Hatred is the reason for lies. The reason we lie about people is because there's a hatred. Now, we don't want to admit that. We don't want to say, oh, yeah, I hate them. Well, if you don't hate them, why are you saying things that are false about them? We know Satan hates us, and that's why he lies. So why are you lying? Well, I would say there's a similar source, which is Satan, and a similar reason, which is hatred. How do I know? Let's go back to our text, Proverbs 26. Look with me in verse 24. He that hateth dissembleth with his lips, and layeth up deceit within him. When he speaketh fair, believe him not, for there are seven abominations in his heart, whose hatred is covered by deceit. His wickedness shall be showed before the whole congregation. Whoso diggeth a pit shall fall therein, and he that rolleth a stone, it will return upon him. A lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it, and a flattering mouth worketh ruin. So hatred then becomes this reason for lies. Let's go back to John 8. We saw this a moment ago, and I said we were going to come back to it. You are your father the devil, and the lust of your father you do. He was a murderer. And then what happens? It says, when he speaketh a lie. But notice first is what's in him. This idea of hatred, murderer. There's this hate inside of Satan, and that hate comes out in these lies that he's speaking. Now, that tells us this. The Bible groups lying with hatred, and it groups the truth with love. So our love for God and our love for our fellow man should make us want to be truthful in all we say about someone. I love the Lord. I want to be aligned with the Lord. I should love my fellow man because that's the second great commandment. And because I love them, I don't want to say false things about them. I don't want to make false accusations. So to make accusations based on assumptions or gossip shows a lack of true godly love. Do you have some verses about that? Yep, we do. Proverbs 16. An ungodly man diggeth up evil, and his lips there is a burning fire. A froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. Now, why would I want to dig up evil? Why do I want to separate people unnecessarily? There's a hatred to that. James chapter 3. Even so, the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. So it takes a little fire, you can burn down a whole house. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire of hell. Now you can't read that verse without understanding God is very much against using our words in a deceitful way. For every kind of beast, and of birds, and of serpents, and of things in the sea is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. So, if Satan is the source of lies, then hatred is the reason for lies. Which brings us, now that's the first half. Okay, so let me stop for a moment. So we're separating our lesson in two parts. The first half, which is the first 2 points, avoiding false accusations. If we don't spread it, there'll be a whole lot less false accusations to deal with. So we want to be careful. We don't want to align ourselves with Satan. We don't want to have hatred in our heart. So we do not want to be the ones who's spreading the false accusations. We don't want to make assumptions. Well, I know what they're thinking. I know why they did that. Oh, I can guess why that happened. That's all assuming motives, trying to read people's minds, which you cannot do. Or spreading gossip. Someone tells you something, you just want to keep it going. All right? Now, let me just stop for a moment, and we'll cover this as well here in the next point. We're not talking about if something wrong is happening and you're trying to inform the right people, that's not accusing or impugning. That is, you know, if something's illegal and you tell the police, or if something in some situation you're involved in isn't right and you tell the people in charge, that's a whole different story. I'm just talking about just you hear something and you just pass it on, or you see something and you just make an assumption. You tell everyone else based on your assumption just because you're trying to just keep it going. That's what we're talking about. That's what we're supposed to avoid. Big number three. So we said Satan is the source, hatred is the reason, which brings us to a third pretty simple statement. Number three is this: love is the response. When we're being lied about or lied to, there has to be a certain love that we show. I'll give you a couple of verses about it. Proverbs 17. He that covereth a transgression seeketh love, but he that repeateth the matter separateth very friends. Proverbs 10:12. Hatred stirreth up strifes, but love covereth all sins. And that is phrased and repeated, I think, in 1 Peter. So we're going to have to deal with false accusations. And we're going to now look at this in two ways, kind of 3A, 3B. So the first way to deal with false accusations is to deal properly with accusations that are told to you about another. So some accusation comes your way, and you need to, okay, what do I do with this accusation that's come my way? Now, think with me. If the only time we get upset about false accusations is when it's made about us, and we don't get upset when other people are being falsely accused, that tells us we're really not standing for truth, we're just standing for self. I don't mind if you get lied about, but I don't want to get lied about. Well, why don't we get upset about any lying going on? We should say, I don't want anyone lied about. I want everyone to be done right with. So, now watch this statement. Love does not cover up sin. And this is a mistake people make. Well, you know, love covers a multitude of sins. So if I love people, I'm going to cover up their sin. That's not what the Bible is saying. Love does not cover up sin. Love covers our response to accusations that are made. So if something is sinful or wrong and we know about it, we're like, well, I'm not going to tell anyone because I just love them. I'm going to cover it up. That's not what the Bible is teaching. But it does mean when I'm dealing with false accusations or any accusations, I'm going to try to cover it all with love because that's how the Lord does things, through love. So love does not cover up sin, but love covers our response to these accusations that are made. Now, since false accusations create such damage in the lives of others, okay, so someone comes to me and makes an accusation against Doug. And I don't check it out. I don't do anything. I just go and tell Dale about it, or go tell Don about it. I start spreading it. If that was completely false, but now other people are hearing it, it's going to create doubt in their mind about him that he can never clear up. Because always, well, you know, I did hear this about Doug some years ago, and so it's such a dangerous thing, such a damaging thing when we spread false accusations. Because of that, whatever we say, we want to make sure it is accurate and true and needs to be said. See what I said? It's accurate, it's true, and it needs to be said. Some things are accurate and true, but you don't need to talk about it because you have no part in it. There's nothing you can do about it, nothing you say that's going to help it. And if I can't fix it or do something in a positive way, why am I keep talking about it? Now, I want you to notice this. In the context of dealing with accusations that are made, Deuteronomy 19 says this: one witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or for any sin, in any sin that he sinneth. At the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. So God's pattern is, it can't just be one person's accusation against another person and nothing else, and then you have to say, well, you know, I like them and I don't like them, so I'm going to believe them instead of them. That's not how we deal with accusations. So we can't just go by the mouth of one witness. So a false accusation comes my way, I need to deal with it. So I'll give you two thoughts about this. If there are more witnesses, then speak to them. Don't just assume they all agree with the accusation. Here's a classic, here's what people say. They'll say, well, everyone believes, so someone comes to me and says, everyone in the church believes this, or everyone in the church is talking about this, or everyone in the church has this complaint, or everyone in the church is upset about this. Here's my question. Who are these everyone? Because the only person talking to me is you. Who else? Well, they don't want to say, then they don't count then. Because if you're really upset, if I know something's wrong, then it is my responsibility to take a stand against it. If I'm not willing to take a stand, then I am not obligated. Okay, if someone is not willing to take a stand, I'm not obligated then to believe them if they're not willing to tell me what they witnessed. So don't just assume that everyone knows and everyone agrees with an accusation. If one person tells you, the only person who's told you is one person. So don't, and if someone comes in and says, well, three other people saw this, well, then go talk to the three other people. Don't just assume they all agree, because you may talk to the three other people. I've done this. Someone said, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I go talk to them, and they tell me, well, not really. That's not really what I saw. Huh, is that so? And then you find out the witnesses are not agreeing. So if there are more witnesses, speak to them. Make sure that the accusation has support. Now, what if there's not more witnesses? If there are not more witnesses or evidence, and the accused denies it, then you don't know the truth. So person A accuses person B, and that's all there is. There's no evidence. There's no other witness. There's nothing. I have one accusation against another person. So person A says one thing. Person B says another thing. Who's telling me the truth? I don't know. So I let it go. What else can I do? Now, what about the accusation coming to you? What if someone's accusing you of something? Well, the second way to deal with false accusations is to deal properly when you are the one being accused. How do you deal with it? How about when someone is accusing you or saying something about you? Now think about this. Our most important consideration should be God's glory, not our reputation. Well, I can't believe they said that about me. What are people going to think? Well, the question is, how does this reflect on the Lord? Because that should be my number one consideration. If we are innocent but respond unbiblically, it will still be a bad testimony for the Lord. If I'm innocent of it, but my response is such a terrible testimony, I still have not helped the Lord out in this. So I've got to make sure my response is the proper response, because I'm more concerned about the Lord than about me. So let me give you two thoughts about this, because yeah, we're getting close. So here's two thoughts about being falsely accused. Here's the first. Seek to live above reproach, so others would doubt the accusations. So if someone comes, we'll use Doug again. If someone comes to make an accusation against Doug, here's what Doug should want. Doug should want his life to be such a proper way of living that people say, no, I don't believe that. I know Doug. That doesn't make sense. I don't believe that. So we should want to live above reproach so that false accusations, even when lodged against us, we're kind of like Teflon. They don't stick to us. 1 Peter 2, here's a verse about it. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul, having your behavior, conversation, honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. So our life should be a repudiation of those things. Now, how do you do this? How do you live above reproach? Don't put yourself in situations that make the false accusation seem likely. If I'm a married man, and I'm never alone in a situation with another woman, if I'm never in that situation, then it's kind of hard for people to accuse me of things. Because I say, well, I've never been alone with a woman like that. Okay, so I'm trying to put myself above reproach. I don't make jokes that seems like, well, maybe he would, because he kind of jokes about it all the time. I don't want to be shady in my conduct. Well, I don't know if he did that, but I know he's kind of shady in these other things, so it doesn't surprise me. I want to live above reproach. Now, none of us lives perfect, but we want to try to live the best we can. So when accusations made, people say, I just don't believe it about them. I know who they are. I know how they live. And then here's the second thought about it, and that is this. Be truthful in your response. Accusations made against you. Be truthful in your response. Don't engage in mudslinging with others. Okay? Answer truthfully, but it does no good to get down the mud with them and fight with them, because now you're hurting your testimony. Back to 1 Peter chapter 2. For even hereunto were you called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who when he was reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. So we have to realize that, now, let's go back to Satan and Job. One of the reasons that Satan makes these false accusations to impugn our motive is to rile us up so that we will say or do something. So we may not be doing wrong, but if he can aggravate us and cause us now to respond wrongly, then he has achieved his goal. I wasn't doing wrong. I got lied about. And in my response, I did wrong. That's what Satan's trying to do. Let's go back to Job. Let's look at that in Job chapter 1. Here's what he said in verse 11. But put forth thy hand now, and this is what Satan says, and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. That's what Satan wants Job to do. Satan makes a false accusation, and he's hoping Job just says, God, I can't believe you did this, and gets mad at God. This is what Satan is trying to prompt. But notice how Job responds in verse 22. In all this, Job sinned not. nor charge God foolishly. So even in his response, he was making sure that it was a biblical response. He was falsely accused, falsely attacked, falsely accused by Satan. Later on, falsely accused by his friends. Oh, this is happening because you must have done some great evil because this is what's happening to you. But he did not sin, even in the prompting by Satan and by others. All right. Let me just give you a couple of statements. I'm going to give you another, I gave you a couple of quotes to start with. I'm going to give you another quote, kind of makes us think about being accused. There was a man back in early 1700s, again, pre-Revolutionary War. He was an evangelist, a very famous guy named George Whitefield. He preached in England, he preached in America, a great, great preacher. One time, George Whitefield was falsely accused by his enemies. Yet, Brother Whitefield believed that he was more important to please God than to honor men. So he received a brutal letter indicting him with wrongdoing. So they sent him this letter, you've done this, blah, 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 and it was all lies. Instead of trying to defend himself, here's his response. Here's what he wrote back. I thank you heartily for your letter. As for what you and my other enemies are saying against me, now watch what he says next. I know worse things about myself than you will ever say about me. With love in Christ, George Whitefield. That's a good response. What you're saying is wrong, but let me tell you, I know before the Lord really how wicked I am, so I'm not going to fuss with you. Let's give you three quick statements and we'll be done. Dealing with false accusations can be very distressful and discouraging. Just like that Ray Donovan. You know, where do I go to get my reputation back? The danger is that we respond in kind with anger and hatred. But that only fuels the problem. So what does it mean then? We must respond in love. Love for God, love for others. And allow God to be the vindication. You can spend all your life trying to fight with these people. And all you're going to do is basically entertain idiots. It's not going to work out for you. Here's what the Bible says, Romans 8, verse 31. What shall we say to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? If God's on your side, why worry? Just you do what's right and trust the Lord in these.